Hello, hello. Nicole Bomer here, host of Blues Show Something Old, Something Blue, every Wednesday night from 8 to 10, and classic rock show Smokin' Saturdays that happens alternate Saturday nights, also from 8 to 10. And you are listening to WIOX Roxbury, live and local in New York's Catskill Mountains at 91.3 FM, MTC Cable Channel 20, and WIOXradio.org.
WIOX is supported by Grand Gorge Tire, family-owned and operated, and ready to serve your needs for new and used tires, including mounting, balancing, and anti-corrosive lubricant. Walk-in service welcomed Monday through Saturday, 8 to 5. Grand Gorge Tire, Route 23, between Grand Gorge and Stamford, 607-588-4100. WIOX is supported by Mountain Flame in Arkville, featuring a range of products for home heating solutions. A variety of fireplaces, wood stoves, and gas and pellet stoves are available and on display. For sales and service, Mountain Flame in Arkville, warming home since 1980. Details at mountainflame.com. WIOX is supported by the Delaware County Chamber of Commerce, a catalyst for sustainable economic prosperity in the Catskills, fostering cooperation, forging partnerships, promoting tourism, providing legislative advocacy, and building strong community ties throughout the region. More information at 607-746-2281 or DelawareCounty.org.
Okay, you are listening to WIOX Community Radio, live and local in the Catskill Mountains at 91.3 FM and MTC Cable Channel 20 and everywhere at WIOXradio.org, where it's easy to donate if you like what you hear. You can also get WIOX on any smart device through the FM radio apps. This is From the Forest every Wednesday, 6 to 7 p.m., talk about a different forest-related topic with Ryan and John. John, how's it going?
It's going pretty good. How are you?
Fine.
Fine. That's it?
Yeah, I'm okay.
Okay.
How's the hunting going, John?
Oh, nothing, no success to report for me. Been a pretty slow weekend when I went out last weekend. I was surprised. This is the time of year to be out if you're a deer hunter, bow hunter in the woods, and I had a slow weekend.
Yeah, I saw a buck while bow hunting up in a tree just after dark. Kind of figured they would move late since it's been pretty mild out. And I was watching the does. And there's these two little yearling does, or maybe they're a year and a half, moving around me, really small. And I don't want to get down out of the tree while they're around me. I just don't like doing that, even though those were not the deer I was after.
Don't want to bust it for next time?
Yeah, so I'm watching them. And then after a while, it's getting kind of dark, and I'm like, that's it, I'm out of here. You know, it's like 6:30 almost. Maybe. I could still see a little bit, so maybe it wasn't that late yet. And I start, you know, doing my thing, putting my pack back on, waist pack, and take my bowstring up from the ground, and I hook it to the bow, and I start lowering it, and I hear a sound. And this always happens sometimes. Well, it doesn't always happen, but it happens, you know, commonly. And I was like, that's a different sound.
Yeah.
And I look over, and I see the shadow of the big one. It looked like a big one. That's what I at least think. I can't really see him that well. See some big antlers. Don't know how many points, but looks pretty wide. And just see his outline. It looked pretty cool. I could see him sniffing at the does, being like, yeah, you guys aren't what I'm after. And I saw him move on. But yeah, so that's all I saw.
I tried a big hunt this weekend. I got up real early. I was out of the house by 5:15, and it was only a 10-minute drive to where I was going. So that was pretty darn early for getting up in a tree.
Yeah.
And I hiked and hiked and hiked, went all the way to the top of a ridge, found a tree that I scouted out months ago, thinking it's going to be a good spot. And I sat there till, I don't know, 9:45 in the morning. Nothing. Nothing. Nothing but chipmunks. And but there was buck sign all over the place. Walking out, I walked past so many rubs and scrapes, and just couldn't believe I didn't see a single deer, not walking in, walking out, or sitting there that whole time. It's just couldn't fathom that. But
yeah,
good place for them to be up and feeding and moving around on that ridge top. But oh well, it was worth a try. It was good fun.
Well, you know, maybe try sitting from 10 to 1.
That's true. Maybe I left too early. Maybe the sign that I'm seeing is deer that are there all day.
Yeah.
Nah, maybe they're down in the valley at night, and they haven't made it back up by the time I was there. So
I was in Barnes & Noble last week, and I picked up Deer and Deer Hunting. They make an almanac each year. I learned a lot. There's a lot of little good information in there. They said, and I agree with this, that the deer really, there's 5 movements.
Yeah.
And, of course, there's the dawn and dusk. But then, but in between, you know, and you've seen them while you're in the deer stand. They'll get up, walk a little bit, eat. Chew their cud, defecate.
And go sit back down.
Sit down, get up, you know, if there's a food source nearby. So they'll do that midday. It's just they might not move as far. But, you know, if he could have been bedded 60 yards away or less, you wouldn't have known it. And then he gets up and he could be using that spot. Who knows?
Oh, yeah. No, it's definitely possible he was that close. I mean, I was tops of the ridges I was at, it was a oak beech ridge. So it was pretty thick up in there.
Like the buck that I saw, I know there's been bucks in the past, and I think he's right wedged in between these houses. And I know he's bedded within probably 60 yards of where I was.
Sure.
I know he is.
If you saw him right at dusk, he probably just stood up and walked over right then.
Yep.
Huh. So. Well, as far as what's going on in the woods, other than the buck sign, that's exploding at the buck sign, that's for sure. I think the leaves are pretty much over with. I mark the end of the leaves by when I see the beech start to fall. Sitting there in that tree stand at the top of that ridge, the beech leaves were beginning to fall in the understory, midstory. I feel like those are last.
You got to find some oak trees on that ridge, man. There's a few, isn't there?
There's some.
Yeah, because they hold on to the leaves a little longer. They're pretty easy to identify this time of year.
Yeah, that's true. Burgundy red color.
Yeah, they're beautiful down where I am right now. The oak trees are really really holding on and showing their foliage pretty nicely. The red oak. The white oak are a little past, but the red oak are nice now. So, all right. So, tonight's topic on From the Forest, which is every Wednesday, 6 to 7 p.m. with Ryan and John, is Kids in the Woods. This is going to be a little unorthodox for From the Forest show. It's not going to be, I don't know, do we ever really stick to the strictly science? No.
Not really.
No. We like the woods. It's too boring then, right? So, this is going to be Kids in the Woods and talking about how we grew up in the woods and how we perceive the woods. how kids in the woods might change today. And what made me think of this was when I moved to the road that I'm currently on in Ulster County. There was this kid up the road, and I see him riding his mountain bike. He's probably like 10 years old, plus or minus. I can't tell when they're that old. So he's old enough. And he's got a mountain bike. Like, he's got gears. And when I was younger, gears was awesome. I mean, I had a BMX Mongoose all chromed out for a long time. And I went a long places with that thing. You know, you had to stand up in the saddle and ride uphill and all this craziness. It was good. When I got a mountain bike, I felt like, you know, I struck gold. You know, it was easy.
Okay.
So I'm watching this kid with a mountain bike go on his driveway back and forth, back and forth, back and forth. And I'm like, the driveway is probably about 40 yards long. And I'm thinking, why doesn't he just leave the driveway? He's going to do it this time. Nope. Maybe he'll do it this time. Nope. And he never did. He never left the driveway.
I bet he wasn't allowed.
These kids, well, yeah, absolutely not allowed. And so I don't see, not only do I not see kids in the woods, I don't see kids leaving the driveways. I don't see them. Something changed. So I don't know. When I was younger, I did the math. I must have been maybe 9 years old, maybe eight. And I was riding a good mile to 2 miles from the house already. And it was just different. I don't know. I have to say, where I grew up in the town of New Paltz, my parents were born in 49 and 1950, and most of the parents were their age and older, it seemed to me, 5 to 10 years older, so that brings you to 1940, people were born.
Okay.
And it was a lot, you know, so it just, there was no supervision, man. I mean, not for me. I pretty much rode wherever I wanted and came back whenever. Unless I was playing sports, which, you know, I could care less about. I had fun when I was riding my bike, mostly. But then when we moved to Gardner to escape the taxes of New Paltz,
yeah,
amongst other things, all the parents were 10 years younger, at least. And I remember it clear as day, like, okay, I got to find, like, a whole nest of kids to hang out with and all this. And I didn't know where any of the kids were. Like, I saw play equipment outside, right? Trampolines,
you
could toys.
See the sign?
Sign of kids. You know, evidence, maybe. No kids. And then I was like, all right, I don't know where they are. So, and then the school bus, I'm riding the school bus, and I'm like, there's a kid coming out of the house right now. He's getting on the school bus. There's a kid there. There's a kid there. There's a kid there. 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 And then I was like, you know what? There's actually a lot of kids here. There's a ton of them. But I never saw them. And this, you know, it was like my neighbors, well, the kid I played with, his mother didn't like me, he said. I was like, why? I was a good kid. She's like, you're a bad influence, man. Like, she says that you just want to, like, go ride your bike and I'm going to get killed on the road or something. I'm like, damn. You know? So what we ended up doing was playing video games. And drinking soda. I didn't drink soda. He drank a lot of Mountain Dew, man.
Huh.
And we didn't go anywhere until eventually I just gave up. And I just ended up riding my mountain bike to Minnewaska, which was nearby, and Mohonk and all that thing. And just went alone. But that was, it was a big difference. And there's no forts in the woods. Not like when I grew up. I mean, we built forts all over the place, man. I mean, we really did. So Jim Waters, who was the former executive director of Catskill Forest Association, we spoke a lot about, you know, growing up and stuff. And I really couldn't see a difference between when he grew up in the, well, he grew up in the, when he was a kid, he would be in the mid-60s. And when I did, I really didn't see much of a difference. But I think in the 80s it definitely began, there's no doubt. And in the 90s for sure. But it sounds like you didn't have too much of that even though you were in the 90s.
I didn't. Well, the thing was, where I grew up, there wasn't kids. I mean, I was very, I guess, rural setting, not even suburban or anything like that. But I had a lot of land. Our family had 86 acres where I grew up. And I got to always remember going out. I remember the first time I got I guess my sister got in a lot of trouble. I remember this distinctly. I instigated it. It was my fault. And we didn't come home for quite a long time. We weren't even supposed to leave the yard. And I was pretty interested in the trees and the woods and what the neighbors were doing. I could see them across the line. They were, I don't know, I think they were cutting firewood or something.
Yeah.
Probably shouldn't have been in that situation. They, you know, trees falling or whatever. But I was quite interested, and I made her stay out with me. And even though we could hear my mother yelling.
Oh, yeah?
Oh, yeah. My mother's probably listening to this, like, you know, figuring out everything that went on now.
Statute of limitations, man.
My sister got in trouble.
Nice. Oh, you're the younger brother.
I was the younger brother.
Yeah, so. You throw her under the bus every time.
It's totally my fault, though. She's like, we should go back. I'm like, no.
Yeah.
We're in the woods. This is fun.
We'll be fine.
I was young, though. I must have been 5, 6 at that point.
Yeah. Well, shoot, when I was 5, I mean, when I was 3, because I remember going to my babysitter's house. I mean, she just let us go, and I walked across the road to my neighbor's house. I can't even imagine doing that today.
Yeah.
3 years old.
I think when I was 10 or so, 10, 11, my father built me a treehouse. And that was what, at the time, seemed like, you know, far in the woods, but you could see the house from where it was.
It's far in the woods. I know where it is, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, it's far for a kid.
It's up on the bank a ways. But
for a kid, that's far.
And we used to hang out there and sleep out, and we had a ball in the treehouse. You know, maybe 12 years old, got a four-wheeler, and that was the end of that. I was going all over. I was going. There was a power line not too far away.
Yeah.
I'd get on that power line, and we could go many, many miles.
Right.
And I don't think my mother knew how far I went on the four-wheeler either.
Yeah. Hey, you know, that's fine.
So, yeah, it was always playing. I mean, you had your mountain bike, and I had some other toys, and once you can get out of the house, it never ended.
There's no doubt. I mean, built tons of forts, lit lots of fires, a lot of fires, you know. One got away. One definitely got away. That was scary, but it didn't. Now, Jim, he ain't here. I'm going to throw him under the bus. He lit a big fire, and it became...
Yeah,
news.
I heard about this fire.
He never told anyone. But it's a long time ago.
Yeah, anyway. Right. What's the statute of limitation on a big forest fire?
It's in the 60s, but it was in Albany area. And so I don't know. Manhunt, man. I mean, just playing completely at night. It was fun. Neighborhood manhunts, you know. It's over like a half a square mile or more. And when you get 15 kids together, you could play manhunt, hiding under cars and trees and bushes, in people's sheds. We don't even know who they were. You know, you get creative. You know,
sure.
But
did you ever get hurt?
Never got hurt.
Me either.
Never got hurt.
A couple times I got banged up pretty good, but never where I broke a bone or bled.
No. Never got hurt. I don't know.
Yeah, I remember playing by the stream once. I fell, and this, of course, you always got to fall on like the pointed rock. That one hit me square in the sternum and right in the chest, and I lost my breath for what seemed like minutes, but obviously it wasn't.
Yeah.
I couldn't breathe, and it hurt bad. And I thought I broke ribs, but I don't think I told anybody about it.
Yeah, I can't speak for girls, but I remember playing with my friend. Yeah, we would throw the baseball as hard as we could at each other. See if we could catch it. I knocked his teeth out.
No.
What the hell are you thinking? That was the only time I ever saw anyone get hurt. This is a really stupid game. Thankfully, I was better catching, I guess.
But yeah, I guess so.
I don't know. I had the mitt probably near my head. I was probably concerned it would hit my head. But
I was the recipient of a rock once. That was the first staple I ever had in my head. Rock wasn't even intended for me. The kid was throwing it at another kid.
Yeah.
It just missed. Hit me. I wasn't looking.
I don't know. I spent a lot of time in the woods. There was these trails near our house that these farmers' kids, they were like the last farm in New Paltz, and their kids were all race car drivers, literally. and they just tore up the place with ATV trails, and it was awesome. I like the ATV trails. Probably why to this day ATVs, like, other people are bothered by them. They're like, oh my God, they're me. I just look at them like that's fun because yeah. I follow their trails.
I was gonna say they kept the mountain bike trail open for you.
Oh yeah, and the thing is, they weren't marked or anything, so you had to memorize them, and it was really cool. You ended up knowing direction, and recognizing places. And then you picked up Busch. I know they drink lots of Busch beer, man.
You found the cans all over?
Yeah, and picked up so many that I would return them and make like, you know, if you made like $5, you thought you were doing good, you know, something.
Right. Kept you occupied all afternoon picking cans.
But, it was an old development that was never developed at the time, and it created like a little park for us. I mean, you know, place to set fires and play in tires and abandoned homes and pick lots of berries. A lot of berries grew up, especially black caps. A lot of black caps. So it was neat. It was a cool place, you know. But weapons. There were lots of weapons. You know, knives. And I think I even bought a, was it a small crossbow? Probably completely legal. Didn't matter. Had a crossbow.
Yeah.
So, it got stolen. Stuff. And I was so naive at the time. Looking back on it, it had to be my friend. He just stole it, probably. You know, who else knew about it? It's in the middle of the woods. He stole it. But I never even questioned it. So.
Darn guy. Yeah, I always used to, I had a book. I don't know how old I was, but maybe 10, 11.
Yeah.
I had this book on how to survive in the woods, like the boy's manual, I think it was, or something like that. And it had like how to like build traps. Like out of sticks and stuff. And I thought that was the coolest thing. I was always trying to trap stuff. And I got good. Like, I can get the squirrels and the chipmunks on the stone wall every time.
Yeah, that's awesome.
Yeah. You know?
So, you know, we think these things don't matter, but they kind of do. Because in those woods that I played in and another friend of mine played in, two of us became foresters. To this day, one is a state forester out of the New York State DEC, and I am. I mean, I work for the Catskill Forest Association when I'm not on WIOX, and I think it had a lot to do with being in the woods.
Yeah.
You just, you know, can't get to know something if you're not out in it, and that's pretty cool. But as I said, things changed, and when we moved, the parents were definitely a lot younger. And a lot more protective. And it even started happening before we moved. For instance, the bus stop. I remember the bus stop, you had to walk, I would say it's a half a mile. If you walked through the woods, it was like 100 yards. If you walked on the road, it was like a half a mile because you had to walk around. So yep. It really is dependent on what we wanted to do. After a while, we just walked through the woods. But over time, they kept moving the bus stop closer and closer. It was like a group bus stop where everyone met, and it was cool because older kids would talk to younger kids, and I thought it was pretty not the time, sucked, you know, you don't want to talk to older kids, they're scary, but looking back on it, it's probably good. But in any case, after a while it became where the bus just picked you up right in the front, and then when we moved it was completely like that, so there was no like socializing between the age classes of kids, you know. I don't know.
I don't even know what it's like today. Like, I'm sure every kid has to get picked up in front of their house. Someone told me that, I don't know, I hope it's not true, but if the bus stops at a house and there's no one there at the house, like, the kid just can't get off. I always got off alone. Like, there's nobody in the house. Like, someone told me the bus driver's supposed to call the cops if there's nobody there to meet the kid in front of the house.
Yeah.
That's terrible.
I know. It's true, though.
Jeez.
I just don't have, yeah, stuff to make a living with kids here. I mean, you got to be home. So, if you're just tuning in, you're listening to From the Forest every Wednesday, 6 to 7 p.m. And tonight's topic is kids in the woods, how we grew up in the woods, and how kids are, you know, growing up in the woods today, and maybe what it'll be like in the future. Up next, I'm going to read what the National Trust Survey, written by The Guardian, just recently published on trends. And kids being in the woods and playing outside. Say it ain't so. Say it ain't so that kids aren't in the woods.
You know, I don't even think adults are really in the woods. When I go hunting, in the places I go all over the place. I don't run into signs of people. I don't expect to run into people while I'm hunting anyway, but other than other hunters. But you don't see signs of where people have been when you get off the trail.
It's true. No, that's definitely true. I don't see them. I don't see them near the streams or in the woods or whatever. So why would the kids go in the woods if the parents aren't? So anyway, tonight's topic is Kids in the Woods on From the Forest every Wednesday, 6 to 7 p.m. with Ryan and John. So what's the data on kids in the woods? I had some time. I was reading some articles. One was in The Guardian, and the other was in The Atlantic. And there was a National Trust survey. Children play outside about as half as much as their parents did. So that's today. So it used to be about 8 hours per week. And now it's about 4 hours per week per kid.
Half.
So.
That's in the woods?
Yeah, well, just playing outside. Just playtime. Like in woods, I don't probably.
I mean,
lot less.
What's keeping kids from. I mean, do they, like, count sports as not playing then, right?
No.
So that's probably what's taking away. I feel like kids are doing sports when they're, like, six.
No, doubt.
I didn't join a sports team until eighth grade. I think it was just too logistically hard for my mother to come pick me up after practice. So it was like, you know what, you're not going to play, which is fine. I was doing other things. I was fine with it.
Yeah, no. Well, I'm going to get to that, but supervised play, we'll get to. That's a whole different animal for sure. So kids historically at play. How much things have changed? 1940s. A lot of these studies were done in the UK. United Kingdom for you American types. Lady Marjorie Allen, who created adventure playgrounds in the 1940s. She did this to toughen up kids. This is post-World War II, like right after World War II. She's like, listen, in case that happens again, we need some tough kids.
Oh, all man.
Right? Yeah. I kind of admire her spirit. So she permitted this whole premise was kids need to figure stuff out on their own. So as little supervision as possible. Like they would have like 6-year-olds just burning cardboard, and they would watch them, but they would let them burn it. Unless someone like was starting to burn themselves, they would intervene. They would take a lot of notes, but they would really not supervise them too much. Huh. It's just basically a blank space with a bunch of stuff. And they could do whatever they wanted with it, like burn stuff down. There was a risk-benefit analysis, say, of lighting fires. They would have, like, all the cost or risk would be, yeah, you could hurt yourself. And then the benefits, like, they learn how to start a fire, learn to judge what burns maybe or whatever, you know.
It was risk judgment, right?
Risk judgment. Yeah.
You can easily, all right, they'll identify really quickly, all right, that was too much cardboard we just put on. That got big fast.
Exactly.
That went out of control.
Right.
So, risk management.
It's a cool thing. For instance, I remember riding my mountain bike, and New Paltz, the town of New Paltz, tried to block off the ATVs from entering this abandoned development by putting a berm.
So it was a jump.
These people are idiots. So
let's make a very gentle ramp for them to jump.
It gets better. It's at the bottom of a hill.
Oh, so you can gain some good speed before.
Yeah. Oh, no doubt. So you ride your BMX all the way to the top to where it met North Putt Corners Road, and then you'd ride as fast as you could. And we did this all the time, and you could get some air. Now, it probably wasn't as much as if I was to watch it today, but to me, it felt like I went 20 feet in length or longer.
Right.
And 10 feet high. I mean, you were up there, man. No suspension. All right? So one time, you can guess where I landed when I didn't use my legs to brace as I landed.
You tipped.
Right on my crotch, man. Oh. That was the only time. Never got hurt, though. And so they basically created a nice little obstacle course for us. It was great. So where was I going with this? Oh, yeah, risk benefit and all that. So we figured it out. What was surprising about these adventure courses was, and I guess they're still going, these adventure playgrounds, there was few injuries. It's like kids aren't getting hurt. They've had some little minor things, like, some shins and stuff scraped up, but very few. Okay, so this guy, Robert Hart, does a 1972 study of, again, UK children, United Kingdom. And he interviews these kids. This is 1972, John.
Mm-hmm.
And they have no problem interviewing kids. In fact, this group of kids bring them to what they call their river houses. And they bring them down to the stream, and they made all these little huts, and they basically play house in them. You know, the girls do one thing, and the boys are doing another. And they have this whole fantasy world that they've created in the woods near the streams. And it's pretty amazing. He was really surprised at how much kids were manipulating their habitat, like doing all sorts of manipulation to trees and the terrain and everything. And I totally believe that. We did that. We built bridges and footbridges and forts and cut down trees and ripped off all sorts of metal and stuff, put it back somewhere else.
Yeah, we would always dam the stream up. We found an old gutter somewhere and, like, found the spring up on the hill and, like, had water that came to our fort that we built next to the spring.
Yeah.
Like, we had running water coming out of the pipe. It was really it's amazing. I'm sure we shouldn't have drank out of the old gutter, but...
Ah, you're fine.
Well, we lived.
You're fine. You lived. So... there's this 1972 study, and the kids are out there. And they're not being supervised. They're pretty much out all day. 2004, and he goes back, and he's like, you know what? I'm going to go back to that same area, 2004, and interview those same kids, which are now parents, and now have kids of their own. And it seemed like from the article that he was so disappointed, he didn't even, like, publish his results, you know? Like, he was, like, not interested by what happened. Basically, he interviewed the same mother, and she was like, "Oh my God, you Robert Hart, I remember you. You took me to my whole, you proved that my childhood actually happened because you know she remembered the whole river houses and everything." And he's like, "Okay, well let's interview your kid," and she's like, "Okay." And the kid doesn't. They have a fenced-in area in the backyard, and they don't even leave that. And the kid is constantly looking at the parent, you know, for where to go next, and he says it's just completely different. Like, there's not much going on. And not only that, when he goes to the local schools, the principal denies him access to interviewing. She's like, it's not part of the curriculum. You're not doing the interviews. And he's like, all right, I'm done with this. So those
parents that he showed that they, you know, benefited from growing up in the woods, they didn't realize that and showed it to their own kids.
Yeah, they didn't pass that on.
No.
So we're going to get into what happened maybe up next, Kids Today. Kids Today on From the Forest. And tonight's topic is Kids in the Woods. Every Wednesday, 6 to 7 p.m., Ryan and John talk about a different forest-related topic.
In your time, innocence will fall away. In your time, the mission bells will toll. Oh, all along the corridors and riverbeds, there'll be signs. In your time, crash across your southern capes, massive storms reach your eastern shores, fields of green will tumble through your summer days, by design, in your time.
yourself the boulder course. Keep your heart as open as a shrine.
If you're just tuning in, you're listening to From the Forest every Wednesday, 6 to 7 p.m. Talk about a different forest-related topic. Tonight's topic is kids in the woods. Kids are in the woods about, or playing outside about half the time as their parents. Pretty interesting. So, what is going on today? Why did this happen that kids are playing less? According to The Atlantic, I thought it was kind of interesting. So, women are also working more today than they were in my parents' generation or even 30 years ago. And, however, despite that, people actually spend more time with their mothers than before. How is that possible?
They're inside with them.
Yeah, they're being supervised more. More supervision. Kids have many more scheduled activities. Almost all the kids that I know of have scheduled activities to the hilt.
Yeah.
There's no doubt. And I'm not really passing judgment, just making an observation here. You make your own. They're your kids. Sports, devices. Hey, I played lots of sports, you know. I really did. I can't say that some of those sports weren't good for me. I think they were to an extent. But I played all year round, man. I mean, indoor soccer, outdoor soccer, soccer camps, basketball camps, wrestling. I had to give up baseball. So spring was the only time in high school for me that I was like, you know what, I can do whatever I want now.
Yeah, I was the opposite. Winter for me, I didn't do basketball or wrestling because I wanted to hunt.
Yeah. Yeah, sports is a killer on those kind of activities like hunting. You know, I remember wrestling, like guys that hunted, they're like, can't hunt right now. It's November and wrestling season just started.
Yeah.
You know, it was a bummer. So lawsuit culture kind of took off as well. So in 1981, the U.S. Consumer Product Safety Commission was begun, and they created a standard of acceptable risk for playgrounds. And these set of guidelines, mostly written by lawyers and not by, you know, people who make playgrounds, according to the article, are the ones who made them, basically. It basically outlined what a kid should be playing on and cookie-cuttered it to the whole nation. And so, you know, I mean, even a lot of those playgrounds that you grew up with are probably gone.
What things might be gone? I haven't been on a playground in a long time. Do you see things when you take your kids to playgrounds that weren't there? That are, you know, things that were there when you were a kid that aren't there now?
Oh, yeah. They're all gone from when I was there, for
like
sure.
What are the fun ones?
Like high rungs and stuff like that. They're a lot lower now.
The tall monkey bars.
Yeah. A lot of those. Not all of them. Some are still there. I don't know. They have a certain amount of wood chips, that's for sure. I mean, if they fall, they're going to land in those wood chips. But I don't know. Tall metal things are kind of gone. You know? Everything is wood or plastic.
Yeah, I remember. Actually, I do know of one. Behind the school in Delhi, there was this giant swing set. It seemed giant when I was a kid. Much taller than the new swing set they put in next to it.
Yeah.
Now the old swing set's totally gone. They ripped that thing down. But my cousin broke his leg on it.
Oh, there you go.
Jumped right off the top and, oh, yeah.
There See?
Goes, there goes his leg.
They should have guidelines, right? So, when asked why these guidelines are necessary or why kids shouldn't be supervised as much, obviously parents trying to do what's right for their kids. They think it's more dangerous. But are they really dangerous? Hey, man, the data says otherwise. Now, you could say, well, maybe they're not more dangerous because we're keeping the kids in more. I don't know. It's kind of like the chicken before the egg thing. But most research says crime has gone down drastically, not only in the United States, but actually throughout the world and mostly in Western Europe. More reporting of missing children. The article claims this, and I believe this, that there's more reporting of missing children, but there actually aren't more missing children. No one wants their children to go missing. And most of the missing children are from custody wars. Divorce. Divorce rate also went up in the last 40 years. Usually when a kid goes missing, it's probably a custody thing. Missing children more from family. This is the shocker, though. Despite playground guidelines, more kids are getting injured. So this is what really fascinated me. So despite all these rules, there's actually more kids visiting the emergency room. So 1981, 156,000 emergency visits per 1,400 kids. 2012, 271,475 per 1,156 kids. So what's going on? And there's more long bone injuries. Those have actually increased, like big bone breaks. Yeah.
I don't know. What is going on?
I don't know. The only thing I can think of, I mean, I'm completely guessing, is just an aversion to risk and not knowing how to navigate. John, when you were out there and you cut a tree and it went right into your pelvis, or when I jumped off that thing, you know, that big berm that the town of New Paltz put in there to stop us from going in.
Yeah.
You may have gotten hurt, but you probably didn't do it again.
No, I didn't do it again. I think it set me up to, you know, be a tree cutter today.
They actually, when I was reading the article, I don't have it on this outline, but they said that kids that when they were, you know, between the ages of like 8 and 12 or whatever, kids that fell from like 5 or 6 or 7 feet were less likely to be afraid of heights later on. So what the article was claiming was that actually kids who were learning how to navigate risk were less fear phobic when as adults.
Gotcha.
John, do you know any adults that are fear phobic?
Yeah.
Oh, I do.
Like,
oh, man, just all the
what
time.
What fear stands out?
I think there's a lot of fear out there over anything.
Yeah.
I mean, just anything. I talked to this kid who's related to me. I'm not going to say who he is, but this was fascinating. We go into a building, and he wants to know where the exits are. Mm. Hey, you might say, well, that's a responsible kid. To me, I'm like, the exits? He wants to know where the exits are. I'm thinking, like, as a kid, like, anything but the exits.
Where's the food at?
So to me, that was really mind-blowing. But if you're just tuning in, tonight's topic is kids in the woods, how it's changed in the last 30 years and what it's like now. And what are the impacts of kids being less in the woods and how that's going to impact our force? So that's what we're going to talk about right now. So what are the potential impacts from not being in the woods? As we were just saying, kids not being exposed to risk, it may develop fear phobias. Who knows?
Well, you know what else it was? It wasn't just fear phobias. I remember in college, now it really points it out. Those kids that went nuts, right? You know those kids. They just didn't know how to handle themselves when they got out of supervision and into adulthood of college.
You mean like there's a bottle of Jack around and you just go nuts on it?
Everybody knows that
no,
guy.
Just, no. Yeah.
And it wasn't me. I'll be honest. That was never me. Like, I didn't stay up all night playing video games, right? You know, those kids that, you know, their parents always restricted them from whatever it was.
Yeah.
You know, staying up and, you know, I got my work done and I went to bed and did it the next day. You know, college was just another thing, another step in the road. And I just, you know, I knew how to handle myself, unlike some of the people around me. And there was a very, very large dropout rate, about a third in my freshman dormitorium between the first and second semester.
Definitely.
And
yeah.
A lot of those kids that didn't come back were the ones that were just going nuts.
Dude, college is... is not what people portray it as. It is there's a lot of partying going on with kids who, when they're unsupervised, who behave like kids and not like young adults. I saw that even when I was there, and it wasn't too long ago, but 2004. For sure.
Definitely.
For sure. Wasting a lot of money and drinking a lot of liquids, man. You know what I'm saying? And doing a lot of stupid things. But so what this study is that kids aren't going to learn how to navigate risk. They may shy away from knowing how to use tools, power tools, chainsaws. Do kids who didn't mess around outside lead to adults who are afraid of change? This is what I think. You know, a lot of these things, like in the forest, we get a lot of people who are afraid of cutting down trees.
Yeah.
And I think a lot of it stems from this. You know, when I was playing in the woods, it wasn't just navigating risk, but I saw an abandoned development. And to me, a lot of people are like, oh my God, cutting trees could have been a development there. I saw berries growing up, man. And you know, if you rewind before I was around and go to farmers who are constantly seeing change, who constantly see trees being cut and the earth being tilled up, and know that that's not a big deal, they're going to plant, it's going to be okay. You instantly see maybe that, yeah, you know, your experiences can change or make you less or more susceptible to risk and phobias and stuff like that. I saw that abandoned development not as a bane, but actually as a benefit. It was a really cool place to grow up in, with all the different berries and trees and all cool things that humans left behind, you know.
So you think the fearful culture in the forest was from people not utilizing the forest?
Yeah. In some ways.
Some ways.
So I don't know. It definitely shaped some things of today. But here's the thing that would, you know, we're almost running out of time. But if you're left indoors, you might become less friendly towards change, especially in the natural environment, you know. And I think a lot of this leads to that precautionary principle that people have today. And this definitely affects forest management, where if you can't prove it's absolutely safe, this is the precautionary principle. If you can't prove that it's absolutely safe, then you shouldn't do it. John, we wouldn't do any forest management. We wouldn't do anything.
Yeah.
If we had to prove it's absolutely safe.
I know.
Can't do that.
I can think of a few situations where we've cut it anyway. We're like, I don't know if this is going to work, but something's going to happen.
No one would plant anything. They wouldn't plant corn. You wouldn't plant an apple tree, that's for sure. You can't say it's actually going to work. You can't do that.
Yeah, I talked to the landowner very recently. They said, after I explained to them, it took a long time, 20 minutes or so, you know, the qualms of apple tree planting and how much goes into it. They said, well, who knew how much work it was? I don't think I'm going to do it now. I said, well... You know, after those 10 years of hardship, you're still going to get your apples. You know, you won't get any apples if you don't plant that tree today.
Yeah, true. You know what will happen if you do nothing? Nothing. So this is my main, tiff or whatever, grudge with the environmental movement today is the precautionary principle that you have to prove something safe before doing it. I would say it should be the opposite. You need to prove harm.
Right.
Prove harm. And when you start saying you can't do anything unless it's totally proven safe, you'll end up doing nothing, never learning a darn thing. And I just don't think that's good. It's not good for rural land uses. If you're doing quarrying, forestry, gardening, farming, you just can't exist upon the precautionary principle. Rural land uses cease to exist. I guess you could sleep in your home. That'll be the land use. That can be proven safe, I think. Yeah. What do you think? Is that safe?
I don't know.
Maybe. So, some things are changing. There's a whole free range thing. Free range kids. Forest kindergarten programs are now showing up in the United States where kids are being told they got to go outside and kind of act for themselves. The free range movement or free range kids is also something. In the same article I was telling you about in The Atlantic, some are touting the humble stick, where you give a stick to a kid and think about all the things you can do. Today, I'd be afraid to give a kid in public setting, in the school. They, you know, God forbid, if a boy picks up a stick, he wants to start playing, I don't know, soldier or something, like boys do. I know I did. You know? Hey, man, that's what kids do.
We whipped apples at each other with that stick.
Hell yeah.
Sharpened the end of it, stuck an apple on, and whipped it at each other as hard as you can.
That's right.
It hurt.
Yeah, man, it could be, according to the article, it could be a pen, it could be a sword, it could be a witch's broom, a dragon's bone. It could be anything your imagination might think it is. I think that's a good thing, you know?
So what are you doing with your kids now, Ryan, to get them in the woods?
Well, my oldest is 6, and I try to just let them go, you know, on the stone wall right now. They just kind of walk. But it's hard, man. It's hard to fight culture, you know? If something does happen, there's going to be a person waiting there, say, see, I told you so.
Yeah.
It's always that person, right? See, I told you so. Told you they'd get hurt. You know, what you're not seeing is that they are, you know, learning how to abate risk. Kids are also smarter than we give them credit for. Like poison ivy, it's out there. I tell them where it is, and they know what it looks like now. Or they stay away from that hairy vine. You know, they just know. I don't think we give them enough credit, but it is tough. It is difficult. The school bus comes right to where the house is, and you know, it kind of, to me, promotes a sense of irresponsibility. Like you can be late, and the bus will just wait there. I almost wish sometimes I don't, for selfish reasons. I'm glad it waits, but for like it would just leave. See, you missed the school bus. This is what happens when you're late and you don't get up.
Now you're gonna have to sit in the front seat of Daddy's truck while he drives you to school, and he's mad.
Yeah, man. I mean, Onioris canceled school last year because it was too cold. And I called him up. I was like, "Hey, can you give me a number about like when you're gonna cancel school? Like, what's the threshold?" And they're like, "We don't have it. We just thought it was too cold." I was like, "So are the kids in Margaretville just hardier than Onioris?"
Because Margaretville had school that day.
That was the last time I called. I saw it was going nowhere. But I was like, I guess the kids in Andes and Margaretville are just cold hardier. I mean, I don't know. It was 5 degrees colder in Andes where I was just at. The kids are out there, and what's going on? Their blood's different. But so anyway, I don't know. So kids in the woods. You got anything else? You got about a minute left.
I just think, you know, take kids in the woods. I would love to start expecting to see somebody in the woods when I go out. Surprise me.
Yeah, but then you lose your nice hunting spots, John.
Is it? Not even hunting season. I don't even see hunters in the woods. Where I go, I'd be so surprised just to run into a hunter.
Yeah, true.
And that would be fun, just to have someone to talk to. And, hey, did you see anything?
Yeah. They like being in the woods. I took them camping this season, and they said they didn't want to go. And I was like, you know what? I don't care. I'm just going to take them. I'm
sure they loved it.
And even if they didn't, I'm sure they'll remember it, you know? If I always listened to my kids about what they wanted to do, what the hell? That wouldn't be any sense. I'd be listening to a 4- and a 6-year-old. I'm not, you know what I mean?
Yeah, right.
Wait a second. I'm 38. I think I'll tell them where we're going to go. But, I think they'll enjoy it, or at least look back on it. But, you know, it's dark and stuff like that. And they're scared, but they're resilient. At least you hope they are. And that's all the time I have, or we have, on From the Forest. And tonight's topic was kids in the woods. And next Wednesday, I don't know what we're going to do. We'll think of something. But up next is Mostly British with Rick Neblong. And have a good night.
Good night, everyone.
Oh, the neon lights were flashing and the icy wind did blow. The water seeped into his shoes and the drizzle turned to snow. His eyes were red, his hopes were dead, and the wine was running low. And the old man came home from the forest. His tears fell on the sidewalk as he stumbled in the street. A dozen faces stopped to stare, but no one stopped to speak. For his castle was a hallway, and the bottle was his friend. And the old man stumbled in from the forest. Up a dark and dingy staircase, the old man made his way. His ragged coat around him as upon his cot he lay. And he wondered how it happened that
And as he lay there sleeping, a vision did appear. Upon his mantle shining, the face of one so dear, who'd loved him in the springtime of a long forgotten year. When the wildflowers did bloom in the forest, she touched his grizzled fingers and she called him by his name.
Hi, this is Eric Rosen, host of Ramblin'. Alternate Fridays from 2 to 4 on WIOX Roxbury, helping to keep the jazz tradition alive. Right here at 91.3 FM, MTC Cable Channel 20, and WIOXRadio.org.
WIOX is supported by Freshtown Marketplace in the heart of Margaretville. Open till 9, Monday through Saturday, Sunday till 8, with everything you'd expect in a supermarket, including local and organic foods, gourmet coffees, micro-brew beers and ales,